accession number 20937, reel 8.
Now, Howell, reel 8.
Yes, this would possibly have been about D plus 10. That's a guess on my part. It will be recorded because the fact that the anti-tank gun was knocked out will have been recorded in the battery diary. I would think it's probably about D plus 10. yes, we were actively engaged right the way through the campaign. Only on a couple of odd occasions did we find ourselves brought to the rear, perhaps of artillery positions, if you like, to the main gun positions for brief periods of time. Most of the time we were in action, either occupying ground to deny the enemy, going forward with the infantry in attacks. We were chased from one part of the line to the other. On more than one occasion, we did more than one attack in a day. On one occasion, I can remember, we did supported three different attacks in a day on three different parts of the line. Perhaps I can give you a brief description of one of those days. We were told to, given the plans for an attack starting at night time, I believe on this occasion some of the infantry involved were the Royal Norfolks. Oh, I can't be 100% sure of that. And we were in position from where the attack would jump off, if I can use that expression, shortly before we were due to start moving. A stack of ammunition which had been brought forward was struck by enemy fire and started exploding. This caused quite a bit of excitement in the area, of course. But anyway, we moved off on time with the infantry. It was a dark night, and the attack was an all-night advance, called for an all-night advance. It became very misty, so that the mist was hanging to the ground. looking out the top of the turret, I could look over the top of the mist, if you like, and anything sticking above the mist, I could see it. I remember at one part where we were going forward, and well, I heard some shouts. We were driving over, unavoidably, over bodies of our casualties, of our own infantry. We continued moving through the night. Obviously, these type of moves leads to contact being lost sometimes with the people you should be following. This happened with me on this night. And as it got light in the morning, I was going through some trees, and just as I caught sight ahead of our other troop M10s, so I also caught sight of, just to my about 100 to 150 yards to my right front, of a German tank. The German tank, as I could now see in this, was using its machine gun on some infantry who were trying to take cover just to my behind trees just to my right. I gave directions for my driver to swing round so that we would be pointing our gun in the direction of that German tank, but my driver could see ahead as where the troop commander and the other troop tank destroyers were, thought he should head that way. So it took him some time before he reacted to the orders I was giving him. By the time he did start swinging round, the German tank's main armament was pointing directly at me, and it fired whilst I was looking at it, and I suppose down to less than 150 yards. Fortunately, it missed. My driver, whose head was poking out of his hatch, didn't like this at all, and he started to drive forward to where the troop commander was now signalling us to join him, which placed us now behind some cover from that German tank. As soon as I could, I dismounted, went to the troop commander, told him that there was a German tank just round the corner of the hedge, and he said, no, it's already been knocked out, it's come over the air. I said, no, it's just fired at us. He said, no, it's knocked out. I asked who had got the sticky bombs, because some of us carried a two-inch mortar, some carried sticky bombs, some others had ordinary Mills grenades. This is how we shared the stuff out. And the troop commander said, you're not having anything to do with sticky bombs, stay here. And I said, the German tank is there. Who's got the sticky bombs? And the troop commander then said, I'm ordering you, Howell, to stay where you are. And I stayed, and that was the end of that. Whether I would have done anything with those sticky bombs, I don't know. But what made me angry was the fact that that German tank's machine guns was machine gunning quite plainly our infantry who were trying to take cover behind the trees. And I felt very angry about that, and the fact that the troop commander would not listen to me telling him that that tank was very much alive and had not been knocked out. Anyway. Yeah.
Was that before or after the previous incident?
No, after. After, yes. Are you still switched on?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That day we were down, we had to join in some more attacks. I suppose about halfway through the morning, we left there, because we were destined to support another infantry attack. I remember as we left there and cleared that area altogether, we were going across a field when some guns, and I believe they were our naval guns on that occasion, they were huge shells, came amongst us whilst we were crossing the field. And the troop commander hurried things up. He was leading in his own vehicle. And unfortunately, we took off from the side of a crater while we were travelling at speed. I assume it was a bomb crater of some sort, and didn't land until we hit the other side. This caused quite a bit of damage to us. It put our wireless radio out of action. The chain securing the 50 caliber machine gun broke, and it swung round and hit me on the back of the head. And anyway, we did clear that field eventually, but I believe that that was our own naval guns that were firing at that time. I don't know for sure, of course. And we made our way towards where we should have joined some more infantry on a start line for another attack. There's probably about 3 miles away, I should think, from where we were originally. And we arrived there, what we thought was too late. We thought the infantry had already moved us off without us. And so we proceeded forward. And I don't think we'd gone much more than half a mile before it dawned on the troop commander that there were no infantry about, and that obviously we were going forward all on our own, and it's time now to turn round and go back, which we did. We turned round and went back again, remembering to reverse our guns, because we normally ran about with our guns pointing forward, and it wouldn't do to go back into your own line direction with your guns pointing at your own lines. This we knew, tanks knew this, tanks did it as well, they used to reverse their guns. And fortunately we did, because there were a line of tanks which we hadn't seen, concealed in a wood on our left. We were now coming back towards them, and they were all pointing their guns at us. However, having said that, we found out that earlier that day, those same tanks, another of our troops from my battery, another one of the troops from my battery, had been in action in that area, and one of those tanks had knocked out one of the other troops' SPs, had knocked one of them out. killing the sergeant, Sergeant Mobbs. He'd been married only shortly before we went over. He went through Africa and he got married while we were back in England, and he was killed. That was I Troop, and that was one of those tanks that had done that, knocked him out in mistake, and had claimed on the air apparently that it knocked out a tiger. One of the reasons why that type of mistake was made, and that wasn't the only occasion when that kind of mistake was made, was because these tank destroyers were up to a point secret. And so no silhouettes had been issued to our own people so they would know what they looked like. And yes, I can understand that people could see us from a distance and think, well, that's a peculiar shape, but it's a German. And yes, we heard that the troop commander of that troop, which was I Troop, and the troop commander, Lieutenant Ginger Woods, had, when that happened, when it occurred, had drawn his revolver and advanced on that tank with the revolver drawn, threatening to shoot the crew and the commander of that tank, which he didn't, of course, but yes, it was a very sad occasion. There were other occasions when that type of thing happened. We took part in lots of actions of that description. My radio operator, the young chap, radio operator, who hadn't seen the action before D-Day, had by this time become, let me say, a nervous wreck. It was almost impossible to get him to leave the tank destroyer at all. He stayed very well. He wanted to stay where he was all the time, tucked underneath cover inside with his radios. He didn't want to get out to take his turn with having to brew up or whatever. It would have got to the stage where you almost had to prize him out. I was very pleased when he took the opportunity to speak with the main battery signals officer and get a posting to battery headquarters, and he was replaced by another wireless operator. My driver, I don't know when it first started, but yes, he started to go the same way, to the extent that we used to, when advancing, he would probably start shouting at me if I had the intercom connected on to my helmet, which I often did, start telling me, I'm not going any further, I'm not going, that kind of thing. My number three was also a great friend of his. They'd all been through the desert together, and we used to try to persuade him, well, it's all right, it'll be quiet, it's not going to, we'll be all right. I know, I used to dose him up with, I used to give him whiskey, because the sergeants always had their whiskey issue, and I made sure I had plenty on board when we kicked off to go over the other side. And it got to the stage where he took a lot of persuading to carry on driving and go forward. And on one occasion, we were, I don't know when this would have been, he took a lot of persuading, both by me and by my number three, who was a pal of his, to carry on. And then we were assigned to do another job. This time the infantry moved through us and went up to take up their positions, and then we had to move up to take up positions with them after dark so that we would be there in the morning to do a further advance. I know it started raining as we moved up, raining very heavily, and we eventually got up to somewhere near where we should be with these infantry, chucking it down with rain, terrible night, and with open turrets. Of course, we were soaking wet, everything was wet. And then the troop commander came to me and said, right, you come on, I'm going to show you the position I want you to take up before it gets light in the morning, ready for the attack starting. So I went with him, and he showed me where he wanted me to move out to before it got light in the morning. He did the same thing with, obviously, with the other numbers ones of our troop. So in the morning, we had a very miserable night, I might add, very miserable night. And in the morning, before it got light, probably about 4 o'clock, I moved into the position he designated for me, which was the extreme right-hand side. The other troop positions, there was one in a hedge behind me and two more way over to my left. That's where the four troop positions were. And I think the attack was due to start, the infantry were due to start moving forward. Don't know what time in the morning, about 7 o'clock. So we were nicely in position before it got light. And these poor, miserable infantry were then became visible to us in the trenches just behind us, where they'd been all night in half-dug trenches full of water. And we made a brew up, and I shared it with them. And I remember standing there beside one of those trenches when the infantry sergeant, and these were Scottish, this was part of the Scottish attack, I think it became known as the Scottish Corridor or the 15th Scottish Division or whatever it was. I stood beside the trench. I'd just taken them a couple of mugs of tea, and the sergeant told them, when you start going forward, you keep going forward and you don't get down. You just keep going forward. You don't get down. There's no stopping. No getting down, no taking cover. You must keep going forward. I remember hearing him say that. And I was still there when the barrage started. And one of the shells, one of the guns, again, as a mainly thing, was dropping short. 25-pounders this time. And the 25-pounders, although everybody hears about how effective they were, yes, in large numbers of shells going down in any place, but this one gun was dropping short, and it was dropping between me, where I was with these infantry, and my gun position. Having said that, that was no big deal. The time came for the infantry to get up out of the trenches that they'd been in during the night and start moving forward. My job was to stay where I was and protect on that particular right-hand flank anything that tried to interfere with them. I watched these infantry start moving forward, and my position was behind a little line of trees, and then there was a hedge ran back this way, and another one of my troop was here behind me down the hedge, and the other two were on the other side, the other two of the troops somewhere over there in some trees. And there's the infantry moving forward, so I could see machine gun tracers zipping amongst them from forward. And I could see some going down. And there were some tanks started to move. We were not ordered to move forward in this particular thing, only to stay where we were and do the protecting. We would have moved later. Some tanks started to move forward as well, and I saw two of them knocked out, just I suppose about 50 yards to my left, if you like. Two of them knocked out. I couldn't see what it was that was firing at them, something from up front, but I could not see it. Obviously it was a tank or an anti-tank gun, but I couldn't see it. And some of the crew from the tanks were out, crawling on their elbows. And because I looked safe where I was, towards us, my number two Ron Barlow, who I'd known now for years, because I'd met him in the 36th Signal Train Regiment at the beginning of the war. He went and helped some of them to our position, did what we could for them. Same with some infantry who were now falling back and gathering where I was. My position looked safe. There was a little bit of a hedgerow there, and some of these infantry were crawling up into that hedge and taking pot shots at whatever in front. And I remember one of them, a little weed of a look, weedy little thing, but the look of him, he had glasses on. He went up there to take pot shots through the hedge. And he had a bullet go through his, just his, the shoulder of his uniform. It didn't hurt him, went through there. And I can remember he came back down, and they were taking it in turns. And I remember he went back up again, this young chap, just behind my tank destroyer, back in the hedge. And this time he had the top of his ear taken off. And this time he came down. And by now, a lot of casualties were gathered round me. Tank crews and infantry. Did what we could for them. And I sent a bunch of them to, on the other side of this hedge that was to my right and leading back towards our lines, if you like, that way. On the other side of it, sent them, told them to take that route back down, casualties. And then I saw one of my troops, tank destroyers, and coming towards me across the open ground on the left. They were taking a lot of fire there. And he thought he would come and join me in the same position. But he didn't get very far. Probably about, I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 yards from me, when I saw the tracer go into him. And as the crew were bailing out, it was hit again and started burning. And my number two went again and helped them to us. The number two from them, he had a very bad wound on his eye. I covered it. Very badly hurt on his eye. Don't know whether he lost his sight or not. And the trouble was, we looked to be in a safe spot. But what they couldn't see is that the amount of stuff that was coming, small arms fire, was coming in our direction from all, from wherever. I couldn't tell where it was coming from, some of it. It was as if it was coming from, there were some trees over to our right, as if somebody up in the trees was firing at us, because even up in the turret, it was up in the turret at one time, which was, that's one reason why I didn't stay out there all the time. Little blue puffs, as rounds were hitting on the breech, gun breech, and that type of thing, around it. So some of the fire was coming into the turret. And because we had so many casualties gathered around us, and there was so much small arms fire coming into us all the time, I decided that I would leave my gun in position. And this is something I should never have done, and move back on the other side of the hedge, down the hedge to somewhere in the region of where the other tank destroyer was tucked into that edge behind me. I did this in discussion with my crew, including my number two, it was a Lance Sergeant, Ron Barlow. My number three, it was a bombardier, Yockey Young. And they agreed that we would move back there for a while till things quietened down, perhaps, because while people saw us standing around there, other people, wounded, injured, kept crawling to us, and they were becoming casualties where we were. It was a bad decision on my part, wrong decision. I moved back to approximately the same place, only on the opposite side of the hedge, as the other tank destroyer behind me. Hadn't been there very long before I spotted a chap coming towards us, obviously injured. He was helping himself along with a stick, corporal. I went to him. He was an infantry corporal. He'd been one of those who take part in the advance. And then we heard the moaning minis start up. These are German rocket mortars. Wasn't the first time we'd heard them, but these were obviously coming in our direction. It's more than possible that in these trees round about we were being observed. And so I didn't need to say it really, get down. It was a case of all get down. But my number two, Ron Barlow, pipe smoker, was sat back in the hedge here. There was a little bit of a gully running alongside this hedge. I pushed the wounded infantry corporal down and laid on top of him. The rest of my lads got down. And sure enough, we were copped. We were in the wrong place. These mortars came down all around us. I heard the infantry corporal underneath me yell out, "I've been hit again." And yes, I turned to look at my number two, Ron Barlow. And as I turned to look at him, so I saw his hand dropping and his pipe dropped out of his mouth. And his eyes rolled into the top of his head. I knew immediately what it meant. Anyway, he was still in a sitting position, half resting, lying back in the hedge. And I couldn't see at first anything on him. And then I saw a small drip of blood on his right shoulder. We had this infantry corporal. He'd been hit again underneath me, and I don't know how that happened, but I decided, and I was very upset. The only time I was upset like that, things like that, because I'd known Ron Barlow all that while. I knew, I'd seen his first wife, I'd seen his two little children at Colchester, right at the beginning of the war and all that. And I decided I would now make my way back, because looking at my tank destroyer, it was in flames. And I made my way back down the hedge. I suppose 500 or 600 yards before we got back to our, where there was a line of anti-tank guns who didn't belong to my regiment. There were some others. And they were the first people I saw. And they were pointing their guns up there. And they said that they were, had I moved my tank destroyer, had I moved it, they would have shot fired at it. They thought we were German tanks. And I found my troop commander not far away, but his troop HQ. Told him what had happened, that Ron was dead. And I know we were all in the state because we'd had no sleep the night before and all the rest of it, but never mind. He ordered me back to battery headquarters. And I said, no, I want to stay. And when I get a chance, go up and bury Ron. He said, now I'm sending you back. And you're knocked out anyway. And I said, well, I don't think so. And looking at it, I think it's only the stowage, the bed rolls and things like that burning. He could see it from where he was. But anyway, he sent me back to battery headquarters. Went in there, and this would be the, I suppose, middle of the afternoon. Went in a tent there and flopped down with the rest of my crew. And went out like a light. All of us. And then the next thing I heard was somebody yelling, come on, come on, you've got to get up front immediately. And Yes, we had to report up front immediately.